You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up, recap the week in Wisconsin news with Rob Mentzer. First, Jewish families around the globe will be sitting down to mark the first night of Passover. It's one of the most important holidays in Judaism, celebrating the Jews' freedom from slavery in Egypt. In the United States, a lot of people, Jewish or otherwise, are familiar with traditional Passover dishes, matzo ball soup, slow-cooked brisket. But for people looking to add something a little different to their meal, they can look to different Jewish traditions, the Jewish community hailing from around the Mediterranean, for ideas. Joining us now to talk about Mediterranean Jewish cuisine is Joyce Goldstein. She's a restaurant consultant, cooking instructor, and the author of several cookbooks. Her most recent is The New Mediterranean Jewish Table, Old World Recipes for the Modern Home. Joyce, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, Rob.
Well, you start off in your book with a history lesson. I'd like to do that, too. Here in the United States, a lot of our Jewish immigrants were from Eastern Europe, and that's the kind of food I tend to think about when I think of Jewish cuisine. Introduce us to this whole other world around the Mediterranean.
Okay. Most of the Jews that did come to this country came from sort of cold weather climate, Eastern Europe. So it's sort of a meat and potatoes diet. Doesn't depend on seasonality because it's meat and potatoes. In the Mediterranean, Jews have been living there since biblical times. In the Muslim countries of, you know, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, they've been there since the days of the Bible. They've been in North Africa, in Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, Egypt, and Libya, also since ancient times. And in Spain and Portugal, the Jews lived there, but after the Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition, they had to leave. These are the Sephardic Jews. And some of them went to Italy, most of them went to Greece and Turkey. So you have these three distinctive recipe collections. One is the Sephardic recipe collection. One is the Maghrebi, which is North African, a little bit spicier, a little bit more complex in seasoning. And then the Arabic tradition, the Jews living in Arabic lands. And all of this is based on freshness, seasonality, and abundance of fruit and vegetables, small portions of meat and poultry, but a very healthy diet, grains, legumes, sort of the opposite of the Ashkenazi diet, and infinitely more varied. And everybody knows that the Mediterranean diet is like the healthiest diet you could eat. So I'd like people to think that they can, now when they say Jewish food, they can also think Mediterranean diet, that in fact there is Jewish food there.
Well, food is at the center of a lot of cultural traditions. Can you talk about the role food plays in Jewish traditions, maybe here in the United States specifically?
Well, we have different kinds of Jews. We have observant Jews, and then we have Jews who identify with being Jewish but are not necessarily keeping a kosher home or even going to synagogue that often. But there's something about an ethnic identity. So for younger people who have grown up in homes that are not kosher, they've eaten widely all over. They've had Chinese and Thai and now Israeli, which is starting to show them Mediterranean Jewish food, surprisingly. And I think it adds a greater variety and also the way people want to eat today, which is a healthier, more varied diet. For older generations, this is a big jump for them. It's hard to give up your favorites. And my theory is maybe have brisket once or twice a year, but eat Mediterranean food the rest of the year because, you know, if you stay on an Ashkenazi diet exclusively forever, you will not live a very long life.
Well, talk us through some of the main ingredients. What are some of the flavors we're going to encounter in your book, and what are some of the ingredients that we want in our kitchen if we're going to start cooking here?
Okay. Basically, in the Mediterranean, everybody is playing with a similar vegetable and fruit pantry. Everybody's got eggplant, peppers, tomatoes, asparagus, artichokes, all of that, squashes. Everybody will have herbs. Some countries prefer cilantro. Others prefer dill or mint. Everyone will have garlic and onions. So they're playing with the same larder, but what distinguishes the food of all these different parts of the world are the use of spices and herbs. The Sephardic Jews like dill, they like mint, they love a lot of lemon. Lemon is on everything. And then there'll be some cinnamon or allspice, But those are basically the flavors. Then you get to North Africa, and it's coriander, cumin, cayenne, hot peppers, saffron, cinnamon. It's a spice riot, and as well as cilantro and parsley and mint. And then when you get to the Middle East, new flavors come in, like sumac and za'atar, which sumac is a lemony flavor, too. And these get added to the larder as well. It's not as spicy as North African cooking, and it has a use of tahini, which is creamier and rich, and a perfect substitute for when you can't use dairy with meat. So there are three distinctive palates. And, of course, you can mix and match, but I think whenever you get a new recipe, you should make it straight the first time. See if you like it. See if your family likes it. And if not, say, what would you like to do to change it? And then maybe make adjustments.
We're talking to Joyce Goldstein. Her new book is called The New Mediterranean Jewish Table, Old World Recipes for the Modern Home. And Joyce, you've sold me on all of these. These all sound like great flavors. So I want to get cooking here. You've got a few recipes that you've provided. We've got them linked on the Central Time Facebook page. And one uses green garlic. And I want to start there because, you know, we're starting farmers market season here. That's something that appears early. A recipe for Turkish lamb with green garlic. Can you talk us through that recipe?
Absolutely. Well, green garlic looks a little bit like a leek or a big fat scallion, and it's the garlic before the bulbs have formed. So you make a basic lamb stew, which has a little bit of vinegar and a little tomato paste, and then you blanch green onions and green garlic separately, and then brown them a little bit in the pan and add them to the stew. And they add the perfume to this. I mean, it's not a beautiful stew. You're not going to look at it and say, oh, my God, let's take a photo of it. But it is so delicious in flavor. And if you want to add some color, you could throw some peas or fava beans in there for little bright notes of green at the end. But I've been making this for Passover for the past, I say, 4 or 5 years since I got this recipe. And everybody loves it, so I'm not going to give it up.
Well, and, you know, we were talking about the brisket earlier, and if you're looking to convert someone over from that sort of meat and potatoes idea, this sounds like a recipe that could be a good starting point. It's got some meat in there, got some stewed meat, but a lot of healthy stuff alongside it. This seems like a good way to cross over from that Eastern European to that Mediterranean-style Jewish cooking.
I think it's an easy transition. I think any of the lamb stews in the book would work. I mean, there's some beautiful tagines with raisins and almonds, too, that are lovely and perhaps, you know, a little bit sweeter for people used to eating their brisket prepared with Coca-Cola or cranberry sauce. That might be a nice transition. There's also wonderful chicken dishes that are sweet and sour. I mean, chicken with apricots and tomatoes, which is delicious, or the Persian chicken with pomegranate and walnuts, which would be great at the Seder. I just think it means changing your mindset and maybe keeping the beginning of the meal that's familiar. Still make the matzo ball soup. Let people have that. But then segue into a new main course or one of the desserts from the Middle East, which are just fabulous.
And at the same time, this would be a good crossover food for people who aren't Jewish, who aren't part of this tradition, to be introduced to this Mediterranean Jewish food you're talking about.
Absolutely. You do not have to be Jewish to cook Mediterranean food. There are millions of Mediterranean cookbooks with great food. But if you are Jewish and you want to follow the kosher laws, then you know you're not going to be getting any recipes for pork or for shellfish or meat with dairy. Otherwise, it's straight Mediterranean food, tons of vegetable and grain dishes, even keeping vegetarians and vegans happy, which we want to do these days. So I think the variety that's available is incredible.
You had a good substitution on one of the recipes. I think there's one that was what would usually be a scallop recipe that's off the Jewish table, but you I think used turkey breast in cut up in sort of scallop sizes.
Oh, the scallopini, yes. Yeah, you just pound the meat, saute it. You can dip it in matzo meal for Passover, obviously, or you might use flour or panko otherwise, but matzo meal right now, and saute it in a little bit of olive oil and deglaze the pan with some lemon juice, or if you have a little bit of even lemon marmalade, a little lemon marmalade and water, which would be really, really fun, and it would be delicious.
We are talking to Joyce Goldstein, talking about Mediterranean Jewish cuisine. A Passover starts tonight. Some meals for Passover observations or for anybody all the rest of the year. She's a cookbook author. Her newest one is the new Mediterranean Jewish Table, Old World Recipes for the Modern Home. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this style of cooking? What goes into it? Do you have a favorite Passover meal, Passover recipe? Do you like Mediterranean foods in general? Do you have some cooking questions for Joyce? Call in now at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And while you're there, you can find the recipe for Turkish lamb with green garlic and a couple more recipes we're going to talk about in just a few moments. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about Mediterranean Jewish cuisine with Joyce Goldstein. She's a cookbook author, cooking instructor, and her most recent book is The New Mediterranean Jewish Table, Old World Recipes for the Modern Home. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're coming from what we think of in the United States as traditional Jewish food of Eastern European origins, maybe you have a question for Joyce about how to Mediterranean up some of your meals. Or if you're coming from a non-Jewish tradition, you want to know how all this comes together, some cooking ideas to inspire your own cooking, call in now, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page, pick up some recipes, and we'll go to our callers. Monique is on the line in Racine. Monique, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I used to work for a gentleman a while ago, and he was of Jordanian descent, and his mother came in one time, and in the back room on a single hot plate and in one pot, she made this dish, and I only remember the translation. It was upside down. So it was consisted of potatoes, and there was lamb, and I think there were some other vegetables, and you basically prepare the whole thing in this one pot, or that's the way she did it at least, and then when you serve it, you turn it upside down, and then that's how that's presented.
Monique, and that recipe is in the book. It's called Tas Kebab, and it's Turkish, and it is the upside-down lamb stew. Some make it with potatoes. Many more make it with rice. But, yes, it's a delicious dish, and it's made in one pot, and then you put a plate over it and tip it over. And, yes, you can find that recipe. So if you liked it, you'll get it in this book.
Monique, thanks for calling. And Joyce, can you say the name of that recipe for me again?
Tas Kebab, TASKEBAB. See, most people think kebab is something on a stick, but in Turkish cooking, a kebab is a stew.
And what's the deal with it, the upside-down part, flipping it over at the end?
Well, what happens is you make the lamb stew, then you add the rice, and, well, it makes for a nice presentation. It's sort of flashy. And here's this woman that had only a hot plate, so for her it was a matter of necessity. But it just makes for a more dramatic presentation. There are also some stews, chicken and things, that are put in like a phyllo crust and turned out upside down. And that's called veiled pilaf. It's rice and chicken and flavorings in phyllo. And even moussaka, like when the Turks do moussaka, they do it differently than the Greeks. They take the slices of eggplant and line like a charlotte mold or a souffle dish and put the filling in there and then flip the eggplant over, cook it, let it sit for a while. You can't unmold it right away or it'll go splat, but you let it sit for about 15 minutes, put a plate on top, turn it over, and it's this beautiful shape. It's for presentation.
Well, Monique, good luck making that Tas Kebab, and let us know when you've perfected it. We'll stop by. We'll go now to Don in Eau Claire. Don, hi.
Oh, hi. My wife and I had a copy of Ms. Goldstein's earlier book by the similar name. We've used Moroccan cooking, enjoyed Moroccan cooking. My question is, I have made Moroccan preserved lemons many times, and they always start with like six lemons and end up with a jar full of them, which when the next season comes around, I've never used them all.
Uh-oh.
And I wondered if you had any suggestions for using Moroccan lemons.
Don, thanks. He's got too many Moroccan preserved lemons. Good problem to have. What does he
do
with them?
That's a good question. First of all, when I make them, I guess I never try to do more than four lemons, like in a pint jar, because you don't, unless you're running a restaurant, you're not going to go through them in vast numbers.
But there are a couple of stews in the book that use the peel of preserved lemon. So if you're doing the lamb with lemon and olives or the chicken, you'll probably use one whole lemon right there. You can chop up the peel and put it in a flavored mayonnaise or an aioli and serve that with just some cooked asparagus, you know, whatever you like. You can use the chopped peel in a vinaigrette, lemon juice, olive oil, some chopped preserved lemon peel, salt and pepper, and use that as a salad dressing. And, you know, I think people put up too much at one time. And I've learned, unless you're doing this commercially, it pays to do it in small batches, even two at a time in a little pint jar, squish them down and put them in there. Because they only take 6 weeks to cure, and, you know, but you can find new uses, too. I mean, if you're cooking roast chicken, you can chop up the peel and make a little sauce for that, or even tuck one inside the chicken when you're roasting it. I like it in stews. I like the strips of peel thrown into the stews.
Don, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Joyce Goldstein. Her new cookbook, The New Mediterranean Jewish Table, Old World Recipes for the Modern Home. Still time for you to join in if you have a question about Mediterranean cooking, Jewish cuisine, bringing them together, or a question about maybe something you've eaten, want to try to recreate. 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page and find a few recipes there from Joyce, including, Joyce, one for Swiss chard and chickpeas. I want to hear more about this because chard, I like it okay. I never know exactly what to do with it. I get it at farmer's market, CSA. Talk us through this recipe for Swiss chard and chickpeas.
Well, all right. First, you soak the chickpeas overnight, and then you cook them and save them in their cooking liquid. And then you braise the Swiss chard. You add onions. And then there are two versions of that recipe in the book. One of them is sort of a milder Sephardic one, basically onions, garlic, chickpeas and greens with a squeeze of lemon. But then there's the North African one, which has quite a bit of lively spices in the onion. And for people that want to see Swiss chard in a maybe a more exciting way, I would recommend that recipe because there you have the spices which add a little bit of complexity to the dish.
Joyce, I like to cook. I am sometimes lazy. If I use canned chickpeas, do I lose points?
No, you don't lose points. Nothing will happen to you.
but you do make the case in the book for when we can getting the fresher and more home-prepared ingredients. That does make a difference.
Well, I think with chickpeas, it's one thing. If you're just throwing them into a stew and it's not the major ingredient, I think that's fine. But I think if you were making a chickpea salad where the chickpeas are the star, then I would want to prepare them from scratch. I even think making hummus. I mean, you can make hummus with canned chickpeas, but I think it's a lot better if you make it with the dried that you soak. It just depends on how much of a stickler you are and how important texture is to you.
Yeah, you had a soup that had chickpeas, lentils, and rice, and you recommended cooking them separately because they all have different cooking times, and then you get that great variety of texture in the soup.
Right, right. Well, see, I'm a nut about texture. I haven't been in the restaurant business for many, many years. Texture is one of the things that either turns people on or off, so texture is key. And in the old days, you know, when they had that just one burner, they threw everything in. So the rice was overcooked, the chickpeas were okay, the lentils were a little too soft, and it didn't matter. But if you're a fanatic about texture, then you will cook the lentils, you'll cook the rice, you'll cook the chickpeas, and then you'll put them together so that each one has textural integrity. And that may be part of my craziness, but it's important to me.
And Joyce, I'm a fanatic about dessert, and you left us with one of those, a Sephardic orange cake with almonds. And you're actually starting off boiling the oranges.
Oh, yeah. This is an interesting tradition. There's also a baklava in there made with that pureed orange or a couple of cakes. The Jews were responsible for the cultivation and trade of citrus fruits in the Mediterranean because at Sukkot, one of their holidays, they have to have the citron called the etrog. And when the Arabs brought all the citrus from China, the Jews took over the cultivation and the trade. And so you will find lots of desserts using oranges and lemon. And lemons, of course, are everywhere. But these cooked orange ones are gorgeous, and the cake retains a very moist texture. And it's actually better the second day if you're having it for Seder. You should have made it yesterday is what I want to say. but it has a lovely texture and a perfume of the orange, and it pairs beautifully with the almonds.
Well, Joyce, as we wrap up, what is on your Seder table tonight?
Well, we are having salmon with rhubarb and tomato sauce because there was rhubarb at my farmer's market this week, and that's a lovely Turkish sweet and sour sauce that it just plays up the fish beautifully. And we're having the lamb with green garlic. We are creatures of habit now. That's one of our favorites. And we are having the orange and almond cake, which I did make yesterday because it's a favorite. And I'll serve it with berries and maybe some slivers of orange, you know, orange segments, little orange flower water.
And everybody who's eating with you has been converted to the Mediterranean-style cooking, I imagine.
They're my family. They have no choice.
They have no choice. All right, well, Joyce, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun, and this food all sounds so good.
Well, get cooking. You have the book now.
I'm stuck here at work. You know what? I'll just run home now.
Okay,
right? This show can host itself. All right, Joyce, have a great day.
Bye-bye.
That's Joyce Goldstein. She's a cookbook author. We've been talking about her newest book. It's called The New Mediterranean Jewish Table, Old World Recipes for the Modern Home. Joyce today ahead of Passover to give us some Jewish recipes, not the stuff we're familiar with, mostly here in the United States, things that came over from Eastern Europe, your brisket, things from around the Mediterranean world. A lot of variety there, and you can find some of that variety. Try making it for yourself. Over on the Central Time Facebook page, we had the recipes we talked about today, Swiss chard and chickpeas, the Turkish-style lamb with green garlic, and that dessert recipe that sounds so good, Sephardic orange cake with almonds. So pick those up. Get the links on the Central Time Facebook page. Make them. Hey, maybe send us a picture over the weekend if you cooked them. Let us know how it turned out.